Con el under $3 menu de McDonald's, un McChicken es solo $1.50. Resulta que ser el héroe de tu primita solo te cuesta $1.50. Por un McChicken, good deal. Solo por tiempo limitado. Precios y participación pueden variar. Precios con entrega pueden ser más altos.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
For two on Fantasy Sports Today, I am Davis Maddock, joined by George Kurtz. We are going to be joined by my friend Patrick Corain a little bit later here in the show to talk about everything going on in the fantasy football universe. We also have our Friday headlines to get to. The Tour Championship and the U.S. Open are going on all day long. Hideki Matsuyama is the only one with an under par round out on the course right now. UNC at Virginia Tech takes on in the ACC tonight. That I think is going to be a pretty good game. Sam Howell, the University of North Carolina Tar Heels quarterback, is a legitimate Heisman Trophy candidate. Michigan State will be taking on Northwestern tonight. Basically nothing I enjoy less than watching Big Ten college football, so you can bet that is not going to be on my TV, George. And of course, we have a full slate of MLB games tonight. We have the Friday afternoon Wrigley game, which will be starting right as our show ends at 2:10 Eastern time. George, what's on the menu for you over this Labor Day weekend?
A lot of baseball. There'll be a lot of baseball for me this weekend here. I said Dodgers, Giants. These two people, they know the Red Sox and Yankees hate each other. So do the Dodgers and the Giants. All right, so this is a really big series this weekend. Also, Jays are playing those Athletics. We just talked about it. The Jays can go on a run. They can get back in this wild card hunt. Oakland's in the wild card hunt, so that's a series I'm looking for. Lots and lots of baseball this weekend.
Lots and lots of baseball this weekend. I assume that the Labor Day weekend, lots of us are going to be watching college football. Lots of us are going to be watching baseball. Do you have a barbecue? Do you have a cookout? Do you have family come in? Or are you just looking forward to a week of relaxing?
Well, I won't be relaxing. I'm actually working for us this weekend. And on Monday, I think I honestly think it's the first time ever. I actually have a draft. One of my home league's drafts is on Monday. Not mine, not the one I'm the commissioner in, but I have a draft Monday at 7, I believe. A little pool party, a little barbecue pool party first if it's a nice enough day. Then a draft after. So that should be interesting.
Yeah. I also am doing basically the same thing. So my significant other, my girlfriend, is out of town for the weekend. So I basically, George, my eyes are going to be bleeding from doing fantasy football drafts from now until Monday. I got the best ball drafts going. I'll be in the FFPC main event. And, things are kind of trending my direction. Some of the guys I've really enjoyed drafting are getting a little bit cheaper. Daryl Henderson for the Rams getting a little bit cheaper. Will Fuller still somehow available in the ninth round. And I actually haven't really given you the platform or the opportunity to do this. We've mostly just been, following my opinions when I've had you come on the show. I would love, if you have them, do you have some flag plants? Like, who are George Kurtz's guys for fantasy football this year? Or guys you think are going to do poorly? Guys you are not wanting to draft in fantasy football this year?
Yeah, I think we all have that, whether it's prejudices for whatever reason. Guys have screwed us in the past, or we don't like certain guys. I already mentioned Saquon Barkley, and I've done I'm in about 30, 40 drafts right now. A majority of them are best ball drafts. I don't play in too many. We have to pay attention to Fab because I don't have enough time, and I forget. Oh, this thing's Fab's on Tuesday. This one's on Wednesday. Third drives you insane. I won't pick up the right amount of guys here. Saquon Barkley is someone I'm staying away from. Kareem Hunt is someone I seem to have on all of my teams. Just available there round 5, round 6, and most of the leagues, if not all the leagues I play in, are some kind of PPR, or it's half point or full point PPR. So he's on a lot of my teams. I tend to wait on wide receiver. It seems like I would say in a majority of my leagues, if not an overwhelming majority of my leagues, the first two rounds, running back. And then after that, I go wide receiver, and I wait on tight end. I generally wait on quarterback. So I'm not someone who's going to pick a quarterback early, not in a regular league. My favorite type of league by far is Superflex, which changes everything, by the way. I'm talking about regular one quarterback leagues here. But more of us will be playing in Superflex leagues. It adds more strategy, and it adds more fun.
It does. I really enjoy playing super flex leagues. You know, I play in the Scott Fishbowl every single year, which is a super flex leagues, but actually all of my dynasty leagues are super flex leagues. So I think that is the obvious thing you need to do for dynasty leagues, because it's no fun. Okay, I have Lamar Jackson in my one quarterback dynasty league. I have Patrick Mahomes in my one quarterback dynasty league. And you ever tried to trade away one of those guys in a one quarterback dynasty league? No one will give you anything. You can't get nickels on the dollar for Patrick Mahomes in a one quarterback dynasty league, or honestly, even in, you know, a one quarterback regular league. That's just kind of the way that it works out. Everyone, we have some good stuff coming for you here in the second half of the show. Pat Corain joined me. We talked about some of the running back situations who have changed over the course of the offseason. We discussed Damian Williams, who is fascinating to me. You know, I have talked a lot on the show about the Chicago Bears. I have, you know, a lot of Justin Fields in best ball. And actually, I just tweeted some of my bold proclamations for the season. One of them being that Justin Fields ends up starting pretty early and actually wins Rookie of the Year. So that means that he is going to, of course, outproduce Trey Lance, outproduce Trevor Lawrence, outproduce Zach Wilson, outproduce Mac Jones. I think it's a fascinating year for offensive Rookie of the Year. Probably, you know, at least in recent memory, the most fascinating that I can remember. You know, Kyler Murray was kind of a shoe-in the one year. Most years, it's pretty much the quarterback that goes earliest in the draft. But I think it's going to be a very interesting year. So everyone make sure to stay tuned for the interviews with Pat, where we talk about some of the running back situations that have changed, and that also will be closing the show with Fantasy or Reality. Stay tuned for that. Stay on the grid for the rest of the day. We're going to go ahead and run to break. See you guys in a few moments.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7.
Con el under $3 menu de McDonald's, un McChicken es solo $1.50. Resulta que ser el héroe de tu primita solo te cuesta $1.50. Por un McChicken, good deal. Solo por tiempo limitado. Precios y participación pueden variar. Precios con entrega pueden ser más altos.
As our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering, real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back into Fantasy Sports Today here on Sports Grid TV. I'm Davis Matic, giving Craig Mish a short little rest while I bring in my buddy Pat Corain from NBC Sports Edge. This is, of course, the week where teams move their rosters down to the 53-man rosters that they're going to be bringing into the regular season. It definitely does not mean that roster moves are done. I would imagine we are going to continue seeing guys added to the physically unable to perform list. We are going to see guys added to the short-term IR. You know, there were even a couple situations where guys actually made the roster just so they could be put on the designated for return injured reserve, and then there will be a corresponding roster move. So, Pat, we definitely are not going to get through all of the fantasy-relevant situations. I definitely think there were some smaller-ish roster moves that signal positive trends for guys higher up on the depth chart. And the first situation that really grabbed my eye was the Chicago Bears only keeping three running backs, one of them being Khalil Herbert. They got rid of Ryan Nall, they got rid of Artavius Pierce, and they placed Tariq Cohen on the physically unable to perform list. Sounds like Cohen is pretty far away from playing. Now, obviously, if you were 97 years old, you'd be like, all right, well, that's really good news for David Montgomery. But of course, you and I have never drafted a running back, so we are more excited about Damian Williams, who all indications from training camp suggest that he is actually going to slot into that Tariq Cohen receiving role.
Yeah, I've been very excited about Williams for a number of weeks because things have been trending in this direction. It looked like Cohen was going to go on the PUP. And the way this stuff works is, you know, the PUP is worse than making the final roster and then going on IR, because then you only have to miss three games if you go on the PUP. you now have to miss six. So we now know for sure Tariq Cohen is going to miss at least the first six games of the season. That puts Damian Williams in a spot where he's going to have standalone value, and he also has significant contingent value because, unlike Tariq Cohen, were David Montgomery to miss any time, Damian Williams steps up into a three-down role. And we've seen this before with him. We've seen him multiple stretches on the Chiefs be highly productive. He's a bigger back. The thing with Williams, you know, if you go back to June and July and think about the play with Williams, it was tougher because he had sat out the year last year. We didn't know how good he was. He's an older player. Maybe, you know, some of the skill has evaporated a little bit there, but he had a strong training camp. He looked good in preseason, and now he makes the roster as the clear number two running back. I think it's safe to assume that he's pretty close, or, you know, still the same guy that we're used to seeing. So I think he has a lot of upside, and he's going to be playable for zero running back teams right out of the gate.
Yeah, he definitely is. Another situation, not where we're necessarily viewing the guys having a fantasy impact right away, but I thought it was fairly interesting that the Carolina Panthers waived two running backs who played for them last year. Reggie Bonifon was on the IR for some time last year, but then Rodney Smith was actually splitting work with Mike Davis and Trenton Cannon in the second half of the season. They waived both of those guys, and then they kept Spencer Brown on the roster as the third running back. But I guess there were certainly some questions as to, is Chuba Hubbard, the fourth round pick out of Oklahoma State, like actually just the stone cold Christian McCaffrey handcuff? Obviously, we saw how valuable that role was last year when Mike Davis stepped in basically the Christian McCaffrey role, you know. And I see no reason why over the next, 10 days of draft season, why would Hubbard not be drafted in the Tony Pollard, Alexander Mattison, formerly Latavius Murray, though we'll get to him in a little bit. I mean, is he not one of the best premium tier handcuffs in fantasy football now?
He is. I think the reason that he won't be is because no one's seen it before, and, you know, therefore it's sort of harder to imagine what it would look like, but we should be able to imagine this. We saw it with Mike Davis. You know, it doesn't really matter how good Hubbard is, as long as he's not a complete bum. And there's reason to think he's going to be much better than that he could actually be very good. I mean, he's a very difficult eval from a prospect perspective because he was so good in 2019, not very good in 2020. Sean Siegel has written very hilariously and insightfully about Hubbard, just sort of how he's, you know, even when he looks good, he almost creates more questions because, you know, he can do something that people don't think he can do, keep his feet with contact, and then he gets chased down from behind. I don't think Hubbard, even if McCaffrey goes down, is going to emerge as a superstar or anything, but we don't need that. This role is so, so valuable. And I agree. I think in some ways, if Zeke were to miss time and McCaffrey were to miss the exact same amount of time, it's possible that Hubbard outscores Tony Pollard during that stretch, because we're not 100% sure that Pollard would get like the full workload that he'd get, you know, 70-75% of snaps. I think Hubbard would, you know, and so then it really just comes down to how talented is he ultimately. There's reasons to think that, you know, he has enough talent to make even more use of that role than Mike Davis did last year. So I don't think he'll ever get this expensive, but the argument that he should be is totally reasonable.
Yeah, another fairly interesting situation. The Rams waived Xavier Jones. Now, apparently he has an Achilles tendon injury that requires surgery, so he would have likely not been a factor. But the nightmare scenario for the Rams backfield would have been, not only is Daryl Henderson splitting touches with Sony Michel and losing some of the high-value touches near the goal line, but the real nightmare scenario would have been Xavier Jones working in just enough on third downs, working in, you know, even 1.5 targets per game going to Xavier Jones instead of Henderson would have meaningfully impacted his projection. But at least now I think that we can safely say both of the Rams running backs are buys at ADP, given what we expect to be that offense. And after watching Jake Funk in the preseason and Raymond Calais also being placed on the IR, I basically see no way that a third running back takes away carries from those two, that this will be a very much like a thunder and lightning style situation for the Rams running backs.
I agree, but I actually think right now the better buy at ADP is Michelle, and he's not the typical guy that I want to be buying. Normally, I want the kind of the Henderson side of this, but I think the market is kind of yet to do its thing with these two, because normally the market prefers the Michelle archetype, the guy who looks like a better bet to be kind of the early down runner. Basically, the market usually wants the Thunder. So seeing Michelle going where he's going in these high stakes drafts, where he's going in like the late 10th, 11th, I think that moves up. I think by the time we get to live drafts, you know, a week or two here, that Michelle ends up more like in the 8th round. And I think Henderson might be right there with him. So if you're playing drafts right now, I think you're going to be looking back on what you did in 2 weeks and probably happier with you know, the prices you were paying for Michelle versus the price you're paying with Henderson. So with that in mind, I kind of like Michelle a little bit better. Bust.
Yeah. All right. Just real quick here. The Eagles waived Jordan Howard. That leaves their backfield to Boston Scott, Kenny Gainwell, and Miles Sanders. And we laugh about the Jordan Howard thing, but it was super bearish if he made the roster for everyone, because he would soak up touches and obviously just be worthless. So we did get some helium on Boston Scott in the preseason. Are you more bullish on Scott, Gainwell, Sanders, just the Eagles backfield? Quick Pat Corain takes.
Yeah, I think the way to play the backfield is Gainwell. He's the cheapest. Scott and Gainwell are both very cheap, but you know, he's the guy I think over the late into the season could emerge as something. And early on now with Howard out of there and Kerryon Johnson gone, who was set to steal a lot of pass blocking snaps, he got waived earlier as well. So the backfield's condensed. And in Gainwell, you've got a guy that might be an explosive talent. Scott is certainly probably capable, you know, as a receiver, but Gainwell might be a star given what he did at Memphis, you know, just how explosive he was, how good of a receiver he was. So I think he's kind of the way to play it at cost.
Yeah, I think you're right. So there we go. Quick run through all of the roster stuff. Well, certainly not all of it. There will be more roster stuff that we'll be talking about for the rest of the week. Everyone, we're going to run into break here real quick on Fantasy Sports Today. See you guys back in a few moments.
Con el under $3 menu de McDonald's, un sausage burrito es solo $1.50. Así que échale salsa picante o ketchup a tu sausage burrito con todo en McDonald's. Solo por tiempo limitado. Precios y participación pueden variar. Precios con entrega pueden ser más altos.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Fantasy Sports Today here on Sports Grid TV. I'm Davis Maddock, joined by Patrick Corain from NBC Sports Edge, who has now finally finished his legendary upside running back series. You can read that on NBC Sports Edge. And we are going to run through some of those legendary upside scenarios for these running backs. Of course, we all know what CMC can do. But after that, you know, we have to ask ourselves, what other running backs can have those 350 PPR point seasons? So we're going to run through the scenarios for some of these guys. And you know what? We're just going to start with a guy that I have laced most of my bets on, which is, of course, Kansas City Chiefs running back Clyde Edwards-Helaire. There's a very clear downside scenario with him, but let's go through the upside scenario for Chiefs running back Clyde Edwards-Helaire.
Yeah. And so in this article, I make the upside scenario for all the early round running backs, and then I also make kind of a downside scenario as well. I think CEH's upside scenario is that he basically takes over the full backfield, and not only does he take Daryl Williams' passing down snaps from last year, but he does something with them, because when Williams is in there, he's mostly just pass blocking. He's not really getting any targets. So CEH comes in, he's playing on more third downs, but he's also getting used more on third downs, and therefore he's able to get about 4.5 receptions per game, which is a big deal to jump up from where he was last year, 2.8, over to, you know, to be above 4 receptions per game. That's really how you unlock access to the 23-plus PPR point seasons. And then the Chiefs' offensive line. I think if that gels into like a top-5 unit in 2021, which is plausible, then you could start to see CEH kind of ripping off chunk gains and efficiently working, you know, his way down the field. He's probably not going to be having like huge, huge long runs, but, you know, kind of like a Le'Veon Bell
situation.
Yeah. But that's okay. If you have an elite offensive line, an elite passing game, you know, you can get, you know, 10, 15 yard chunk runs, and those add up. And then of course he also needs a lot of touchdowns to hit one of these seasons, but with an elite offensive line, and he, you know, we saw him get the goal line work to begin last year. No other running back is coming for that goal line work. So if the Chiefs just start running the ball more traditionally at the goal line, it's easy for him to kind of rack up, you know, maybe not a 20 plus touchdown season, but you could easily see him getting in the end zone like 18 times in 16 games, getting those 4 plus receptions per game and having like 23 points per game in the late second to early third round, which would win leagues.
Yeah, I mean, if I was to summarize it in 2 bullet points, it would be monopoly on the third downs and 15 goal line rushing touchdowns, basically, which are, of course, 90th percentile outcomes, but you don't have to squint that hard to see those things happening if he can just play okay. The next guy, Joe Mixon. We are entering into year 5 with Mixon, just waiting for this to happen. We've been waiting for it every year of his career. He has tantalized us. Now, he has always played with a bad offensive line. He has almost always had suboptimal quarterback play, finally got some good quarterback play, but still the terrible offensive line. The offensive line is still bad, but our legendary upside scenario for Joe Mixon is basically Giovanni Bernard is gone. Can he play 80% of the snaps for the Bengals?
Yeah, and you also have Samaje Perine, the new backup. He averaged just 1.1 receptions per game last year in the 10 games that missed. Obviously, moving from Bernard to a guy who really isn't involved as a receiver at all could be quite helpful. Now, you do have Chris Evans potentially lurking, but Joe Mixon has a path here to not just dominating snaps, but dominating receiving work in a way that he never has. He's never had 4-plus receptions per game in his entire 4-year career. This is the year that he could plausibly get above that. And then you have this Bengals passing attack that could be prolific, but it doesn't really have a tight end. You probably are going to have Burrow with some limited mobility, at least to start the season and maybe throughout, coming off of this ACL tear plus. So that would, you know, potentially set up a situation where Mixon gets used a lot around the goal line, short passes, gets a lot of rushes, and, you know, they're getting to the goal line fairly often with this passing game, setting them up for that. So he's a guy that I can, you know, having more of a ceiling than CEH because he can just have a total domination of the snaps and get in the goal line, get in the end zone a bunch. You know, he could pretty easily hit like 24 points per game, and, you know, really get there on a combination of touchdowns and receiving work in an explosive Bengals offense.
Yeah, and his upside is certainly tied to Joe Burrow's health. His upside is tied to, you know, Ja'Marr Chase being worth the number 5 overall pick, the pick that the Bengals spent on him, and not losing snaps to Auden Tate. That would certainly be a little bit of a disaster for Joe Mixon because it would just mean that the offense is less efficient. But, you know, he is going to be a function of how well that offense is marching down the field. And, you know, if they're scoring 26 points per game and getting into these shootouts, like, that is going to be good for Joe Mixon. If they're bad and Joe Burrow is getting sacked and Auden Tate is playing instead of Ja'Marr Chase, and, well, you know, then it's not as great. I easily see the upside case for Joe Mixon. Like, what is Samaje Perine or Chris Evans going to do to demand that he leave the field? But I am, you also are just kind of worried about, like, LOL Bengals, right? Like, the offensive line being so bad and things like that, which are just sort of contextual factors. The next guy we 100%. Need to move to. Yeah. LOL Bengals is a very powerful force in the world of fantasy football.
Yeah.
The next guy we need to talk to is Jonathan Taylor, where he has this amazing offensive line. He's tied to a quarterback who's been injured. We really don't know what Carson Wentz is going to play like this season. I think if anyone knew how Carson Wentz was going to play this season, and they told you that, I think they'd probably be lying. And then he also has a fairly large thorn in his side, which is that he plays with Nyheim Hines, who is one of the best receiving running backs in the league. He's very explosive. He's a decent enough pass blocker that it's, you know, not going to get him benched or anything like that. So JT kind of has that pressure of, you know, maybe poor quarterback play, and you know, he does have the great offensive line. How do you see it playing out for Jonathan Taylor?
Yeah, I think with Taylor, that offensive line is going to be really big, because with him, you're betting on explosive plays. You're betting on him, you know, in the scenario I got specific, and I was talking about, you know, week six, he's owned in 30% of GPP lineups because they host the Texans, you know, and then he runs for 2 30-plus-yard touchdowns in that game. Like, that's the season you're really hoping for, where he's having these huge blow-up weeks. There's going to be some frustrating weeks with Taylor, I think, even in a season where he is a legend. But you're also hoping that he gets enough receiving work, that he gets sufficient receiving work. Nyheim Hines is away, but he can still get enough receiving work where he resembles, like, a little bit like the Dalvin Cook profile from last year, but maybe even a little bit more receiving than what Cook had last year, similar to what we've seen in years past from Melvin Gordon or from Todd Gurley, where they're not getting dominant receiving work, but they're still getting over 4 receptions per game. And then they're pairing that with explosive plays and just a huge touchdown rich season. I think that's in play. If Carson Wentz's play is up to a certain standard, then Taylor can kind of take them the rest of the way there. I also think that with Carson Wentz, perhaps a little bit more immobile to begin the season, and the Colts in some potential shootouts early in the season, you could see some more dump-off passes to Taylor, which is going to be crucial for Taylor. He needs to get more of that dump-off work, ideally some screen passes and some plays where he can, you know, take some receptions to the house. But however it comes, we want more receptions for Taylor, and perhaps this foot injury, as long as, you know, Wentz is on the field, could ultimately be a slight improvement for Taylor if it keeps Wentz from running and has him dumping off a little bit more.
Yeah, it certainly could. And then our final guy, probably the nearest and dearest to our hearts, considering how we've been drafting this offseason, but it's Antonio Gibson, who no longer has to deal with Peyton Barber, doesn't have to deal with Jonathan Williams. Now, Jarrett Patterson, a guy that I definitely liked as a prospect coming out of Buffalo, just given how dominant he was at that level of competition. But the J.D. McKissic problem does remain. So the legendary upside for Antonio Gibson is what, and what likelihood do you think it is at this point that he actually gets there?
Well, the reason I like Antonio Gibson so much is that, you know, you've got the one path where sidelines J.D. McKissic and takes over this backfield over the course of the year, and it's sort of the CMC type of path where he's snap dominant, stud pass catching running back. That path, I think, is fairly thin. Like, McKissic's good at what he does. It's probably closer to a Nyheim Hines situation than one where Gibson can just kind of take McKissic's job or really sideline him to where he's getting, you know, half or more of what McKissic got last year. But what I think he can do is operate within that Jonathan Taylor mold, where he's getting the sufficient amount of receiving work. And we saw this in the preseason where they're throwing to him quite a bit, even though he's not playing that many third downs, or McKissic, you know, in preseason really owning third downs. So, you know, with Peyton Barber gone, in the scenario I wrote, I said he completely sidelines Peyton Barber. Well, that's been taken care of. Peyton Barber's no longer on the team. So Antonio Gibson just completely owns work around the goal line, and then he gets sufficient receiving volume, which I think is quite plausible to have one of these explosive, you know, Melvin Gordon, Todd Gurley, Dalvin Cook type of legendary seasons, the same type of outcome that we're hoping for from Jonathan Taylor. And then he's not completely dead to eventually work into a bigger snap count over the course of the season. as he siphons work away from J.D. McKissick in the receiver.
Con el under $3 menu de McDonald's, un sausage burrito es solo $1.50. Así que échale salsa picante o ketchup a tu sausage burrito con todo en McDonald's. Solo por tiempo limitado. Precios y participación pueden variar. Precios con entrega pueden ser más altos.
Receiving game.
There you go. Legendary upside for Antonio Gibson, Clyde O'Connor, Jonathan Taylor, and Joe Mixon. Everyone, we're going to head to break here real quick on Fantasy Sports Day. I'll be rejoined by Craig Mitch in a few moments. Break.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Hello, everyone, and welcome in to Fantasy Sports Today here on Sports Grid TV. I am Davis Maddock, joined by George Kurtz here as we are winding down our show heading into Labor Day weekend. Of course, need to remind everyone over the course of their Labor Day weekend, you don't want to be stuck in front of the TV. Maybe you're out at the lake, maybe you're grilling, maybe you're at the barbecue. Definitely make sure to follow at Sports Grid and at Sports Grid TV. You'll be able to stay up to date with the latest line movements, changes, our best bets. You're going to get all of our content that's being produced over the weekend. You'll get Pharrell Coast to Coast. You'll get Ariel. You'll get highlights from this show over the course of the week. You'll get George. You'll get in-game live. Everything that you need for your sports betting and your fantasy football weekend. So make sure to follow at SportsGrid and at SportsGrid TV. We have a nice long weekend coming ahead of us. I am very excited. Got lots to do on the agenda. I got the honey-do list, George, you know, got to mow the lawn, got to take care of all of that stuff. Definitely going to be a big part of my weekend. And I assume we are looking forward to lots of fun stuff for our viewers and listeners as well. And now we are heading into fantasy or reality, though we don't have Brett with us today. All right, so we do not have Brett with us today, which means that I have to be the guy who poses the question, which is, all right, I like to be the commander-in-chief here for Fantasy or Reality, but we do have some good ones that he has set up for us. And the first one, always fascinating to me. You know, I love, George, when these guys from college basketball end up becoming tight ends in the NFL. Did you know Antonio Gates played basketball? Do you know Jimmy Graham was a power forward at the University of Miami? It's the absolute favorite fact of, you know, the ESPN broadcast, the CBS broadcast, and Mark Vitale, who was a power forward for the Baylor Bears. He decided that he probably wasn't going to make it in the NBA after going undrafted. He decided to try out for the Seattle Seahawks. And as of right now, Friday, September 3rd, he actually has made the roster for the team. Now, he's not on the actual roster, but he is on the practice squad for the Seahawks, so he doesn't count against their 53-man roster, but they can call him up when and if he's ready. So a simple question for you. Mark Vitale, fantasy or reality, will play one game for the Seahawks in 2021?
My first thought is no, but the practice squad nowadays is 16 players, so he could be really number 69 on the list. I think he's a project. I think it's someone the Seahawks will think there's something there, but just to play this year probably means that something went wrong. I don't think it could really – it's just not that easy. We see this all the time. Tim Tebow, I'll just be a tight end in the NFL. I'll be a tight end in the NFL. Right? How many wide receivers now in the that were NFL wide receivers once they get a little bigger, a little heavier? I'll be a tight end. It's not that easy. So I think he's a project. I think there's a chance in his career that maybe next year, the year after, but not this year. I'll say fantasy.
Yeah, the Seahawks have actually had a lot of success with guys like this. You know, they've been a team. They have brought in guys from the NFL international program. You know, you hear about the rugby players coming in and playing. Like, the Seahawks are always trying out someone like that. They've had someone from Australia on the roster. They also have had success converting guys into tight end. Will Disley, who is going to be one of the tight ends who plays for them this year, was an offensive lineman in college. True story. Look it up. Will Disley, a college offensive lineman. They have converted defensive linemen to offensive linemen. They've converted offensive linemen to defensive linemen. So this is stuff they love to do. They also, you remember Tyrone Swopes, the old University of Texas quarterback? He actually played tight end for them 2 years ago and was forced into action due to injuries to their other tight end. So you know what? I am actually going to go reality. I think that Mark Vital, I mean, he looks like he has great size. You know, I can't say I remember watching him play a ton of college basketball, but I do think it's a reality. I think he is going to get up to the active roster for at least one game in 2021. I'm a believer, so I am saying reality. Our next one, if you have not seen this, absolutely, you're on your phone, right? You got to go watch this. Go to the PGA Tour's website, go to Instagram, search for Brooks Koepka. Brooks Koepka's butterfly putt is the putt of the year. This putt, if you haven't seen it, he's probably got about a 25-footer. He hits it. It's absolutely perfect. And a butterfly out on the golf course tracks his ball all the way from his putter all the way into the cup and just barely sits on the golf ball right as it's about to go into the cup. I mean, you could not write this stuff up. You couldn't animate this. You couldn't put this in a movie. It is certainly a case of real life being better than fiction. So, George, Brooks Koepka's butterfly putt is the putt of the year, fantasy or reality.
This was pretty wild watching this. I watched this a couple of times because it was just, really? This thing, I think, is track it. Why? I mean, I've seen birds come and pick up a ball, you know, take it and run, stuff like that. Even animals, smaller animals across the green there. But I've never seen a butterfly do what it did here. Yeah, I'll say it is the putt of the year. And I'll say it's going to continue to be the putt of the year. We're in September. We only got a couple of months left. Not a lot of good golf time in. So, yes, for me, this is the putt of the year. I've never seen this before, which is what makes it to me the putt of the year. I've never seen a butterfly do that, where it's actually going along with the ball was pretty wild here. So, yes, putt of the year.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I was thinking about, like, who, like, so what are some of the other really good putts that have happened this year? Colin Morikawa made a couple good ones, you know, but Bryson has made some really long ones this season. So I don't really think anyone else is close to this. I mean, I guess if you're thinking the best putt, you would want it to be in a big moment. You'd want it to be on a Sunday. You'd probably want it to be at a major championship. You know, you definitely want it to be for birdie or for eagle. I remember Will Zalatoris made some pretty good putts when he was charging up at the Masters. Hideki made some good putts, but we just haven't had a ton of drama at the major championships this year. You know, both the PGA Championship and the British Open were, like, we knew who was going to win as the guys were heading over onto the back nine. So I think this has got to be a reality. I think that the best putt this year, putt of the year, Brooks Koepka's butterfly putt, even though it came on a Thursday at a playoff event that maybe not that many people are actually watching. Our final one here, this is going to be very self-explanatory, very simple, George. Fantasy or reality, you have watched The Office, and I'm actually going to extend this even further. I'm going to say you have watched all of The Office, every episode, season 1, season 11, series finale. You've watched the whole thing.
You would be correct. Correct. I did watch it all. As far as I know, I've watched it all. It's funny. I don't know why I watched it all. I honestly was not in love with this show. I think it's one of those shows where I watched it so much. All right, I might as well finish it off here. I know James Spader came on at the end here. He was the new Steve Carell. And I think the show was – and I like James Spader a lot. But I didn't think he was very good in the role. But it was interesting enough between, Dwight was – they were a lot of good characters on the show. So, yes, I believe I watched every episode as far as I know. But it wouldn't be anywhere near. If you ask me what my top 20, 50 favorite shows are of all time, Always would not be on it. So I think it just became a habit to watch more than anything else. Not something I really loved here. Certainly nowhere near close to my favorite comedies like Two and a Half Men, Friends, Married with Children, something like that. But yes, you are correct. I watched every episode.
Yeah, reality for me, I've watched every episode as well. Some of the episodes, now this is, you don't love this, some of the episodes have not aged that well. You know, some of the Michael Scott character has not aged that well, but I will stand by The Office. I have watched every episode. You know, the first, I would say probably what, the first six seasons, I've probably rewatched those a ton. Now, I do really enjoy The Office, so my opinion would be slightly different than yours. You know, I think it's probably one of my 10 or 15 favorite shows. I really enjoy Steve Carell. I really enjoy John Krasinski. I think most of the actors in that show did a really good job. Here's a question for you. Have you also watched all of Parks and Rec, you know, basically created by the same guys, Greg Daniels, Mike Judge, those guys, very similar writers, very similar style, you know, an Office Place comedy. Have you watched all of Parks and Rec?
Survey says no, I have not. I don't think I've seen one episode of Officer. I don't think so offhand here, Fox and Recreation. I couldn't tell you who was in it. I've heard of the show. I have. I don't watch too much regular TV as it is. But I don't watch too much comedies nowadays. I don't think they're very funny. You know, I'm more sarcastic, slapstick funny. Like I said, Married with Children, Two and a Half Men, that kind of humor, maybe guys who, whatever you want to call it, there is what I just gravitate towards. So no, Parks and Rec, I have not seen one episode, and I could not name you one character or one actor in it.
All right, well, that's pretty interesting, because I guess it has not had as much staying power, right? Like, you know, people are signing up for NBC streaming service Peacock. They are literally signing up for it just to get episodes of The Office, because they, you know, they didn't buy the DVDs and it got taken off of Netflix. But Parks and Rec did have a run, you know, like 2010 to 2013, where it had a similar level of popularity. Okay, another question, since we're here, you know, this is Casual Friday. We've loosened our ties, the suit coat, you know, it's at the end of the wedding, the suit coat's off, it's on the back of the chair. The Simpsons, how many seasons of The Simpsons have you watched? And is that a big part of your television viewing?
The Simpsons. Yes, I think as far as I know, I've seen every episode of The Simpsons. The Simpsons started when I was a senior in high school. Think about that. That's when it first came out here in 87. So I've seen every episode. I've seen some episodes many times here. I think it's funny. I certainly don't think it's a kid's cartoon, by the way. If you watch the show, you really watch it. It's more adult humor than anything else. So much sexual innuendo. But I think it's funny. I enjoy the show. So, yes, I've seen The Simpsons. I just got done watching, I think, the first 18 seasons. I was binging the first 18 seasons over the summer. So I just got done watching them over and over again. It makes me laugh. That's the bottom line here. It makes me laugh. I think it's interesting. And it's funny how they've predicted a lot of things that have come true in actual life as well.
Yeah, I could not agree more. The Simpsons is probably, all things considered, you know, how many episodes I've watched, how much I've, you know, like read about it and heard the background, listen to podcasts with the writers and things like that. Actually, I had one of the writers, Mike Price, on my podcast, and we talked a little bit about, you know, what it's like to write an episode of the show and everything. So I it's probably my favorite show, definitely the show that I have watched the most episodes of. No doubt about that. Do you have a favorite episode or a favorite season? Give the people something to watch on their lazy Labor Day weekend afternoon.
You know, I think my favorite scene in the show was when they're showing Bart about how he was a good kid at once, and they're fanning through his report cards, and at the beginning it's nice smiley faces, and then you see it slowly turning into a demonic face as Bart became Bart Simpson. And the other one, as far as a sports related reference, you know, Homer's talking to Bart, and Bart's mad at him, and Bart won't have a catch with him. And Homer goes, "There's something intrinsically wrong when a son won't have a catch with his father." And then you see Grandpa come in. "Hey, he's in a baseball uniform, a glove. Hey, I'll have a catch with you. Get the hell out of here." I just die every time I see that.
Yeah. No, I think my favorite one is One Fish, Two Fish, Three Fish, Blowfish. That's a classic one. That's with Blinky the Three-Eyed Fish. I mean, season three, probably my favorite. So, you know, log on your Disney Plus, do what you got to do, enjoy that over the weekend. We got that. We got college football. Everyone, we're going to head into break here real quick, and we'll be back to end the show with the Sports Grid 60. Don't go anywhere. See you in a few minutes. Break.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering.
Con el under $3 menu de McDonald's, un sausage burrito es solo $1.50. Así que échale salsa picante o ketchup a tu sausage burrito con todo en McDonald's. Solo por tiempo limitado. Precios y participación pueden variar. Precios con entrega pueden ser más altos.
Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Hello, everyone, and welcome into our final segment here on FST on Sports Grid before we leave you guys for the Labor Day weekend. As always, we are going to close the show with the Sports Grid 60, where we get in the mind of George Kurtz and myself. So I will send it on over to George.
All right, for me today, listen, it's fantasy draft season, and I love drafts. There's nothing like a draft for me. It's like Christmas morning for adults, right? You make your draft, you get to see what your presents are, who's on your team here. But what I don't understand is in fantasy football, why aren't there more IDP leagues, individual defensive players? Why don't we draft defensive players? For the most part, we don't. I would say about 90% of leagues are just, you know, you may draft the team defense. Yay. And what do we always do? Draft that defense in the 14th round, you know, second to last round, whatever it might be. Draft them late. We ignore defensive players, and I don't understand why. I'm not saying you need to start out by taking three defensive linemen, three linebackers, three secondary players, but they're important. We don't ignore them in baseball. We draft pitchers. We don't ignore it in hockey. We draft goaltenders. And basketball, steals, and, you know, and blocks, they count. That's defense. But in football, we ignore the defensive players. It's always annoyed me. I like playing IDP. I've been on this soapbox for years. I know Gary Davenport, a friend of mine, he does the IDP-only league. Love that. Why do we ignore IDP? Play in more IDP leagues.
Not for me. I won't be joining you, George. I apologize. So for my Sports Grid 60, I just want to close this out. You all have your drafts this weekend. You all are doing that. So I have my final fantasy football flight plans. I'm just going to run through them real quick here as we end the show. Zach Ertz finishes as a top 10 tight end. Dallas leads the NFL in points. All three wide receivers are top 24 PPR wide receivers. Justin Fields wins Rookie of the Year, finishes top 10 in fantasy points per game. Daryl Henderson gets 1,500 yards and 10 touchdowns. Laviska Shenault is the best round five or later wide receiver. Will Fuller ends up a laughably good value. And DJ Moore goes in round one next year. Everyone, have a happy and safe Labor Day. Thank you to George. Thank you to Craig. Thank you to everyone over at LTN. And we will see you later. Stay on the grid.